impact and exactly what it means to you. And so again, I want to thank you very much for joining us tonight for the Labor Continuum, for representing the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. Thank you very much and have a good evening.
Thank you. And good
thank
night.
You. Good night.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor a salsa dance party to celebrate 17 years of the Community Alliance of Tenants, the only statewide grassroots tenants rights organization. December 6th, from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m., this party will include a light dinner buffet, short program, and salsa lesson. It will take place at the Grand Cafe at 832 Southeast Grand Avenue in Portland, Oregon. Again, that's the Community Alliance of Tenants Salsa Party, December 6th, from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. at the Grand Cafe. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Good evening. This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. Recently, I visited Right to Dream 2 and Sisters of the Road Cafe in Portland to speak with people who have criminal histories and are homeless or unemployed. I asked them about their experience with checking the box on employment or housing applications. You know the box. The box that asks the question, have you ever been convicted of a felony? Many companies are using criminal background checks in their hiring decisions. Since 9/11, the industry has grown and criminal background checks are inexpensive and readily available. In the right situations, criminal background checks do promote safety and security at the workplace, but too often employers, staffing firms, and screening firms disregard civil rights and consumer protections, and they categorically ban people with criminal records from employment. Since 1 in 4 adults in the United States has a conviction history, the impact of this discrimination is widespread. So Right to Dream 2 operates a space in downtown Portland where people can rest or sleep safely and undisturbed. And Sisters of the Roads Cafe offers a supportive community where people can do a job to earn a meal. So at Right to Dream 2, I spoke with Floyd and Carrie. But first, I toured the outdoor rest area with Willie Jackson.
This is where the women sleep. We sleep 6 women in here. When they come in, we give them a sleeping bag and bring them in here. This is for couples, right?
How big are these tents, Willie?
I don't know how big, but they hold 6, 7 if we're really cold. Couples, same-sex couples or whatever, and their service dogs, too, can come. This here is the men's tent right here. 20 people we can hold in here. The overflow tent for men, and the women's overflow is right here, so we can get them in. That's for members only to sit and smoke, but we're going to knock that out and put women here.
And what is a members only?
Well, that's for the members. The members got their tents back here, and they man the security 24 hours a day. That's what the members are. And to be a member, you must come to a meeting and do like 3 hours of work here. If we vote you in, you can become a member.
Right. How many members?
There's 25. 25, we need more. We painted these doors. There's these doors because they were all white. We planted tomatoes, which are still growing in the winter, to make it a little more colorful. This is called Area 51, where we have clothes, and we take them up under the bridge and hand out these clothes. And we, like you see, we have shoes, so we hand them out. Right here is the hot, cold water where we wash the dishes and do different things, the garbage. This is the kitchen, all right? This is the kitchen where we cook sometimes and feed a lot of people. Members that get together, go to the store, buy food, and cook it up. We have, I don't know where Taz went. We have Taz, he fixed soup and stuff. and we put a table out there and feed the people, you know, so that's good. This here are the sleeping bags, which are very important. They have to be washed 4 times a week in order to keep them clean and fresh, and then we spray them down to make sure everything's all right. But that's important because people come, they don't have sleeping bags, so we give them a sleeping bag, but we get it back at the end of 12 hours. This is the educational center right here, and that's Amber. Amber, come here. She is the main force behind it. She's on the board of directors. She acts as a rack. She keeps us grounded, in line, and all that. That's Amber. That's Max, her super dog.
Hi, Max.
You know, without her, this place wouldn't run. So that's what this is, and these are all members. Me and Gordon is working security right now till 3 o'clock, and then somebody else come on. So that's how it is.
How warm is it here at night? These are open tents.
Yeah, well, it gets cold, but that's why we give sleeping bags. You know, sleeping bags, sometimes blankets and a pillow. And it's and the body heat keeps it warm. All right. There's one of our success stories right there, Chris. He was a member. He got his own place now. He went through something, and he came out on top. That's what we're about, you know, Chris. So that's it.
My name's Kerry White.
And Kerry, we hear noise in the background. That's the city of Portland. There's been a water main break, I understand.
Correct. It broke about, I'd say 1 o'clock this morning.
And did it affect Right to Dream too?
Well, it put us underwater quite a bit, but it didn't get high enough to affect any of our tents, and so everybody still stayed dry that remained in the tents. And once they got the sewers to start letting the water drain, then it cleared out of here pretty quick.
How much water was actually in here?
I'd say about a good foot deep.
And it didn't reach the tents?
Did not.
Because you're right on the ground here.
We are right on the ground, but our pallets are up on wooden platforms, and so it didn't reach high enough to get inside the tents.
Has this happened before?
No, ma'am, it has not. Just when it rains, we get flooded in here, but never with the water main breaking.
So this winter, you're expecting some more flooding?
When the rain really hits, we'll be walking around in water in here, but because the ground isn't graded properly for drainage, and so it just basically pools up and turns this place into a swamp. Everything you see that the rest area runs with is either private donation, or we've been able to purchase it through financial donation or fundraisers that we do.
So what do you do here? You are a member, and what do you do here at Right to Dream True?
Well, as being a member, I'm also a rest area coordinator. I'm in charge of taking care of the tents. I'm in charge of taking the recycle in and turning it in, taking the sleeping bags and doing the laundry on them, and doing pretty much the maintenance around here to keep things up and running.
And, you know, it's quite noisy here during the day. You're right on Burnside and 4th. And then with all the activity, and then with the city of Portland over there fixing the broken pipe, now we hear a siren. What is it like at night?
At night, it's not any quieter because we've got Dante's across the street, plus all the other clubs around us. And so they close off certain streets for the bar patrons. And Dante plays their music at full volume with their doors open, so we go to sleep listening to their music or the sirens or whatever, the traffic, and it's just something you learn to get used to.
Do you have a background? Have you been incarcerated?
Yes, ma'am, I have. I did 8.5 years, and I'm now doing 7.5 years on parole with 4 to go.
Do you have a problem finding employment, having a criminal background?
I have problems finding employment, finding housing, whatever, because when I go look for employment, I fill out my application. It asks if I've ever been convicted of a felony. I put on there, we'll discuss the interview. And when I go for the interview, and they says, well, I see here it says, we'll discuss the interview. What do you mean by that? And I explain it to them, and I never hear back from them. And then when it comes to looking for housing, I can only go to places where it's not close to certain locations, because of my background. And also when I put on there that I've been convicted of a felony and I let the property owner know or the management know what my felony was, it's like, well, I'm sorry, I can't rent to you. And so I basically end up between a rock and a hard spot to say,
Carrie, what needs to happen with that little box you have to check? Have you ever been convicted of a felony?
Well, you know, the way I see it is, yeah, I did my crime, I did my time, now let me live my life and quit holding my background against me. Because even though I'm on parole now for still another 4 years, I'm in full compliance with my parole, I'm in full compliance with everything I'm supposed to do. I'm human. I have a right to live indoors too. I have a right to work if I'm able to work. Quit holding my background against me. Anybody who has a felony, quit holding their background against them. They have a right to make a living and live in a decent place. And it's just people don't see that. They want to hold that against us. And I don't think that's right.
Hi, Floyd.
How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
Very good. Thank you.
It's a beautiful sunny day in Portland, isn't it?
It is. Yes.
So are you a part of Right to Dream too?
Well, I was here when they first got started about 2 years ago. I stayed here for a year and a half. And so I got my housing. I got my Teamsters Union pension. So I have an apartment there on Oak and 4th Street. So I'm doing okay now. Yeah.
You lived here for a year and a half. Why were you here?
I was totally homeless for 4 years. And this would have been a good spot for me to more or less get back on my feet, you know, where I would have a stable place, you know, to keep my belongings and get some rest. Couldn't get no rest out on the street, you know, living in doorways and living up in the woods.
What's different about this place?
Well, it's secure. You know, there's no drugs, no alcohol, you know, and they got 24-hour security.
It helped you get back on your feet.
Yes.
And have you been incarcerated?
Yes, I was incarcerated one time. That was around about 5 years ago. It was possession of cocaine. That was my only charge.
Once you got out of prison, were you able to find housing and employment?
No.
Why not?
Well, nobody don't want to rent to you, you know, when you get, you know, possession of cocaine, I guess. You know, when you get a record, it's pretty hard.
Did you ever talk to employers or house managers about your application or the issue or your incarceration?
Well, at the time, I was more or less really depressed about the whole situation. So I never did try because I know what the answer would be. No, 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 no.
So you just stayed on the streets?
Yes, stayed on the streets.
And now you were able to get housing now. Why?
Because of this place here, it gave me the motivation and everything.
So it not only gave you a secure place to live, but it also gave you motivation?
Well, just having a secure place. Out on the streets, you get depressed, and all you want to do is to drink and do drugs. Yeah, I mean, because that's a very depressing life.
You are listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. I'm speaking with people about their lives after incarceration and the unfair and unreasonable barriers to housing and employment. Next, I spoke with David and Zach at Sisters of the Road Cafe. Hi, David. Tell me about yourself.
Well, I'm just a normal, average person trying to do what everybody else is doing, looking for a job to support his family and maintain a good, stable life. As far as job-wise, I've noticed that, yeah, that box is a big problem. I honestly think that box just needs to go away because all it's doing is just causing a lot of chaos and it's causing a lot of depression.
And what box are you talking about?
The one that you have to check if you've been convicted of a felony or not, considering the fact that whenever you check it, a lot of companies will sit there and say that they do not discriminate against felons when, in reality, they actually do, and it makes it a lot harder for, you know, people that have actually done their time and, you know, have moved on, don't want to go back to the same lifestyle anymore. But when they go to try to look for a job and they have to check that box, they get a little bit, you know, nervous. They don't know if they're going to get discriminated against or if the job's going to sit there and say, well, you have a felon, get out of our business.
And how has that affected you job-wise?
I mean, it's affected me in a real big way because it's really hard for me to look for a job right now. And every time I have to check that box, I get really scared because, like I said, I don't know if the company's going to discriminate against me just on account of that I have my felonies.
Do you feel that companies have discriminated against you?
Well, there's a place that's in Tennessee that I filled out an application for. It's staff partners. And when I filled out the application, I had to check, yes, that I was convicted of a felony. And they looked at that and they're like, well, we were going to hire you, but since all you got felonies, you have to go.
And do you have any other experience?
Fast food restaurants, manufacturing corporations, just in general. I mean, there's been times to where I've had to literally do side jobs just to make enough and need just to support my family. And I've got a couple of kids and everything, and with me not having a job is making it really hard on me, and it depresses me.
So what do you do for income?
Right now I'm out flying a sign, doing whatever I can to make any type of money I can get my hands on. Because every dime that I make is all going towards my daughter. I have to do what I got to do just to actually buy my daughter's Christmas presents this year. And I'm not used to that. I'm used to actually having a full-time job, being able to sit there and pay my rent, pay my bills, pay all my utilities and everything like that. And like I said, it's depressing. A lot of homeless guys out here that are trying to look for work, it's not just me, but I noticed that a lot of them are in the same boat, considering the fact that they're trying to look for jobs and they get the same treatment. It hurts me to have to see that, because there's a lot of good workers out here that are felons, but yet society does not see that. Society only sees, well, these guys are going to end up going back to the same thing they did in the past, which is probably ripping the company off or anything like that. And a lot of guys don't do that. As far as I can see, you know, I wish a lot of companies would, yeah, get rid of that box, because it would make the economy a lot more better. It would actually provide a lot more jobs. And there would actually be probably a 50% decrease in homelessness if they got rid of that box, which is what the government's not looking at.
How long ago were you incarcerated?
I was incarcerated September 29th of 2003. I got out November 17th, 2004. I was on parole until 2006. So it's been quite some time ago, but ever since then, it's been affecting me like crazy. You might as well say I'm doing time out here, considering the fact that, you know, I'm on the streets, I'm homeless, and I'm trying to do what I can to actually get myself indoors. But, and that's the same thing with my wife, too, because, I mean, she's trying to help us both get indoors, and she's getting turned down because she's got felonies, and she's been trying to look for a job.
So this has affected housing for you also, as well as employment?
Yes, yes. It has affected quite a few things besides housing, employment. It's affected my living situation, my stability, everything. I mean, as far as looking for a job, I go out looking for a job day in and day out, trying to look for some type of work. I go out, fly signs, just to try to make whatever money I can to actually give to my wife, say, here, give this to my daughter. She sees that I'm actually trying. Everybody else sees that I'm trying. It's just the government. They seem like they really don't care when it comes to homeless.
What do you think should be done?
Banning the box. I think that's a really great idea. I honestly think that that box just needs to go away, because all it's doing is just causing a lot of chaos and it's causing a lot of depression.
And where are you living now?
Currently, right now, I'm living in any doorway I can actually lay in if I don't get harassed by the cops and told to move.
In the city of Portland?
Yes. Pretty much downtown a lot. A lot of times I'm out at Lombard because that's where my wife stays. She's actually indoors right now. But she is currently trying to look for us an apartment and trying to get me indoors, because she's already feeling bad enough that I'm out here and she's inside.
And how long have you been living like this?
Couple years now. Living on the streets, you know, the only thing I see is a lot of drug addicts going around, walking around, and some of them look like zombies. I mean, the only thing I see is another picture of myself and one of them that what I used to be. And that's why I mainly just want to get off the streets completely, because I'm tired of seeing the same old faces over and over again.
And what type of work do you do?
I can pretty much do anything. I have experience in welding, construction, carpentry, brick block work, manufacturing, automotive, small lawnmowers, basically. I have a lot of experience in a lot of things. My main thing, though, that I actually enjoy is taking care of my family.
How often do you get to see your children?
Three times a week. Matter of fact, I just ended up seeing my daughter yesterday, so that was a good thing. That's basically the only thing that's holding me together is my wife and my kids. Other than that, I wouldn't be here. And, I mean, I know you probably heard this story before, but if it wasn't for my family, I don't know what I would do, considering I'd been down too many paths, I'd been too depressed, and I'm tired of being tired.
Thank you, David.
Not a problem.
My name is Zach. I'm 29 years old. I am currently awaiting trial for a burglary charge and two theft charges that I've had. And they specifically, the offer on the table for me is no probation. They want me to go to prison. They said 24 months is what we're offering you. And so this isn't my first time in prison. So I went to prison. See, when I was 18, I was using heroin, and I got strung out on heroin, and I had no way to get, I couldn't get my medicine, my heroin. So I broke into a store out in Virginia, and in the store, I managed to get $361, and I took it, and I got away, and the cops caught up with me. Well, in the state of Virginia, they charged me with breaking and entering in a grand larceny. And breaking and entering, if it's done while the sun is above the horizon, it's a misdemeanor. And if it's done when the sun is below the horizon, it's a felony. It's a commonwealth state. The laws are pretty ridiculous. And I also got charged with grand larceny, which is theft of $350 or more. And I took $361, so I took $11 too much, a few hours too late, and they sentenced me to 4 years in prison. It's a mandatory minimum 85% of your time. But I had been in trouble with the cops before, and I've done a little bit of jail time, but once they finally sentenced me and I knew I was going to prison and I got on the van, I think the average amount they spent to keep me alive for those 4 years was $67,000 a year just to keep me alive. And within the first 10 days, I watched seven people die in receiving. I saw 4 suicides, 3 murders, and I can't even count the number of people, maybe close to 30 people who have died in my vicinity of, like, you know, in my line of sight or...
In the Virginia prison.
Yeah.
And you were 18 at the time.
Yes. Let's see. I got out in 2008. I went in 2004. The trial went for a little while, and I didn't really see the point in it. Like, I know that I took the money from the store, and I know I messed up, and, like, I even, you know, here's the money back that I took. You know, I didn't give them any problems. You know, I followed what they said, and I wasn't, you know, rude to the cops, and I'm still responsible, but, like, the amount of pain and sadness that I had to see, I mean, I had to watch people die just because of how they looked. And or they couldn't handle it. They're getting life sentences and they're jumping off the top tier and just landing head first, and it's not a pretty picture. Okay, so now I'm in trouble again. I went a long time without using heroin. I went almost 6 years, I believe, from 2008, from the time I was out of prison. I hadn't used any opiates until like 4 months ago. It was in July, and I had some relationship problems, and I decided the best thing for me to do would be to stick a needle in my arm again and hopefully not think or feel or remember. And within 2 days, I had warrants out for my arrest. I went on the run, and they found me, and now I am looking at 3 felonies, and they want me to go to prison. Like, they said they want you to do time. They say you're a bad guy. Like, this is what my lawyer is telling me, how they're portraying me. And they send, you know, I'm on pretrial release, and I go back to court December 11th, and they leave me with, all right, well, we want to give you 2 years, so just check in with us every week and do good, you know? I mean, how am I supposed to think when you're holding 2 years over my head? Am I supposed to maintain a positive attitude? Am I supposed to be optimistic towards the future and make goals to try to achieve? Like, it's just really just like a weight they just put on my shoulder, you know? At least don't tell me. Just tell me when you get there, I'll spin a wheel, and whatever it lands on will be fine. Because this way, I don't have any barriers. Right now, they're putting barriers on me because I have to walk around knowing every decision I make, it could be the difference between me going to prison or not, and it kind of looks like they really want to put me there anyway. So,
and so you've been in Portland how long?
Total of almost a year.
Have you looked for housing or employment since you've been here?
Yeah, employment is one of the hardest things for me, especially like when you look online. Majority of the jobs that I see that say require a criminal background check, I just skip completely. It's hard for me to explain myself. I don't mind being honest about my criminal history, but, like, I don't want to be put under the chopping block. I don't want to be, that's my past. That's, you know, that doesn't make me who I am. You know, and if you're going to judge my ability to work off of something, some bad decision that I made in my past, I don't want to work for you anyway. So, like, I just skip the process completely.
And how many jobs does that leave then?
Non-legitimate jobs, like cash under the table jobs and volunteer work. Not much. I've applied for some positions that do require a criminal background check, but sometimes they say, like, they'll do it for 7 years and then they'll do it for 10 years. So, like, I was 18 when I committed this crime. I'm 29 now. So, like, some of these felonies aren't even showing up on my record now. But if I made a mistake and they did 7 years or I don't know, however long, it's confusing to me. I don't know. Sometimes when you look at an application, it says, have you ever been convicted of a felony before? And it'll say, check yes or no, and then explain, you know. And I usually put, I'll yes, and then I'll explain in the interview to kind of just try to sidetrack it and just get face-to-face meeting, because otherwise I wouldn't have that face-to-face meeting if I just wrote down the list of charges I've had. Well, this guy's stolen stuff. He's broken into places, you know. It's immediate bad first impression, you know.
Are employers contacting you when you check that box and say, I'll explain in an interview?
The only employers that are prospectively looking for me to work are fishing boats in Alaska. And I have actually been offered a job by 2 fishing companies. But because of my charges, I'm not allowed to leave the state of Oregon.
And what about housing?
Housing, when I first got out of jail, they kicked me out in the morning. And I kind of knew that I was homeless, so...
And what time did they kick you out?
It was like 5 or 6 a.m. in the morning from Multnomah County Jail, downtown. And
what's open at 5 a.m. in the morning?
Nothing. I was arrested like a month or two before, and I was arrested in shorts and a T-shirt, and I couldn't even get a jacket. So I was running around. It's almost wintertime, and like I had to scramble for everything, like clothing, and then find a place to live, and then food stamps, and just like they just let me out to find the hoops and then jump through them, and, you know.
And so what did you do for housing?
I would usually show up to, like, R2-D2 Tent City at 5:30 to put my name on the list so that I might be able to have a spot there, worst-case scenario. And then 6 o'clock, 30 minutes later, I'd have to go up to Portland Rescue Mission and try to get a lottery number for the beds they had downstairs. And then, so I would go in between both places to see if I either got a lottery number or I got a bed at Tent City, show up at 9:30. So if I didn't get in at Portland Rescue Mission and I didn't get in at Tent City, I slept underneath the Burnside Bridge. I'm on the shelter waiting list for TPI. That's not really permanent housing, but I went to Central City Concern and I told them my situation, and they said that they're not allowed to allocate any money for me because I'm on pretrial release, which means I haven't been sentenced. So they couldn't give money to somebody who, or put me in housing if I'm just going to go to prison. Like, they don't want to invest in me because I'm in limbo. So
where are you living right now?
I am living in a community style house. It's a family style house. It's a lot of friends. We all take care of each other. Everybody contributes. We bring food to the table, you know, tobacco. We all buy big bags of tobacco to smoke cigarettes and stuff. I mean, it's kind of silly, but we make sure we have food, coffee, everybody has clothes, and it's just the nicest thing I could have right now.
And how much do you pay for this?
I have no money. My friends don't expect anything from me. They expect my behavior to be on point, and I just want to continue on the path that I'm on and taking action to change the way I am. I'm here every day at Sisters of the Road, every day working and giving what I have, because it's the least I can do. I know I've done people wrong, and I've went to jail for it, and I went to prison for it, and I might go again, but until that point, I'm going to be here taking action to show people that I'm not that guy. I made a bad decision. It doesn't make me who I am, you know.
Zach, what do you think should be done about this box on housing and employment applications?
I think it should be gone. And I think that everybody should have a right to speak face-to-face with whoever does the hiring. Like, you shouldn't get to judge somebody before you meet them. It should be a one-on-one meeting. Be like, look, I'll be happy to lay everything out on the table and talk about it openly with you, but don't judge me on it. Look at my resume. Don't look at my criminal history. I don't know. Let me just show you that I'm changing, you know? I mean, it's not just me, but other people are changing too, and you can't see it because we don't talk face to face. You know, all you see is that box, and you don't see me. You know, I'm just a name in a book. I'm just a number, and unless you take the time to see me and talk to me and look at what I'm doing and see my actions, I'm just going to be a bad guy. I'm just going to be the guy they want to throw in prison just because of a bad decision.
What type of work are you looking for?
anything. I'll do restaurant work, dishwashing work. I have an OSHA 30 card, so I've done a lot of construction work. I've done brick work, but flooring is one of my specialties. I like to do carpet, hardwood, tile floor. I know how to use majority of the tools involved in those, and I like talking to people, too. I think at some point I'd like to maybe get into education, not for a job, but to be able to speak to people and share a message, you know, whether it be hope or a sandwich, I'm still going to share something with somebody, and it'd be nice to be able to see everybody on an even plane so that I can, you know, I'm not a saint. I think differently than I act a lot of times, and it's a process, you know, to change. And I'm taking those steps, and you don't see it. You know, the police don't see it. And I don't know.
The Ban the Box campaign challenges employers to choose their best candidates based on job skills and qualifications, and not on past convictions. In 2012, the Ban the Box campaign successfully advocated with the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission to clarify and strengthen its guidelines pertaining to arrest or conviction history in employment decisions. The Ban the Box campaign, a national civil rights movement of formerly incarcerated people and their families, can be found online at bantheboxcampaign.org. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Thank you to our engineer, Danielle Parks. Good night.
This has been Prison Pipeline for Monday, December 2nd, here at KBOO Portland. A quick note, if you enjoyed Labor Radio tonight with the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists with special guest Tony Funches from the NAACP, you can contact the NAACP at www.naacp1120.